from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattada! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it!
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast with Ben Shulman. I'm Owen Valentine. Last week, we were talking about the high spirits in terms of the Syracuse fan base. This week, not the same. We said everyone was kind of one leg in, one leg out on the train. And everyone is off the train at this point. They got off, whether it was at the bus stop or not, they jumped off the train because this Syracuse football team is falling apart. They looked terrible against Duke on Saturday. They're injury riddled, and they've got a game against Liberty that should, in any stretch of the imagination, be a blowover game year in and year out. And Las Vegas says they're three-point dogs. So things are not looking good for Syracuse. We'll break it all down right here on the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Follow along with us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod for our in-game thoughts, for our during-the-week thoughts, for any other thoughts we might have. You can tweet at us there, get our thoughts on any questions you might have. We'll do the research if you don't want to go through the years and years of stats to see how bad this Syracuse team actually is. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod and follow along with us on wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever. Get us a rating, give us a review over there. But Ben, there's a lot to talk about today. Duke was bad. You've got your arguably two best players out for the season in theory. There is a lot spiraling down the hill for Syracuse right now. We'll start with that Duke game.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. There is not a lot of positives to look at. And the Duke game was just probably as poorly as a game could have gone for Syracuse. Coming off that Georgia Tech win, everyone's hyped about the revamped run game and maybe the SU offense is starting to figure it out. And, of course, you know, the defense is doing great. And then the defense gets pummeled on the ground by the Duke run game. The offense can't do anything. And once again, Syracuse falls to an opponent that, you know, we feel may not be more talented than the Orange, but in this case, they were most definitely the better team. You mentioned the injuries, and I think that's where we have to start. You know, Andre Sisco ruled out for the season in the press conference on Monday. It was alluded to that Jawar Jordan could be out for the season as well, not confirmed, and that Tommy DeVito will be out for extended time. You said the two most talented players are the best players. Regardless of whether that's true, definitely the two most important players, your starting quarterback and the captain of your defense. This was a transitional year for the Orange, and now it's even more, I think, of a transitional year, because without QB1 under center and your first-round draft pick, potentially a defensive player, what can Syracuse really expect out of this roster?
And you look at the defense, I mean, there are injuries everywhere on both sides of the ball in terms of, you know, vital injuries. You lose Eric Coley, Dino Baber said after the game on Saturday that he's also going to be out for a little bit. They didn't give as much detail-wise on Coley's injury as they did on Sisco's, saying he's out for the season. Stephen Bailey reports DeVito will be out for the season. But with the loss of Coley and Sisco, you really do see it in the run game. And this is something that I talked about post-game on the double overtime with Max Chadwick, who came in as a guest host a couple of weeks ago. and with Anthony DeBundo, who writes and covers Syracuse football for the Daily Orange. When you lose those two guys, you can replace them in the pass defense. And you've seen that because the pass defense, although it has let up a few big plays and has not been amazing, the guys that have subbed in have looked all right and have infiltrated the system pretty strongly in terms of the 3-3-5 and playing the pass defense. What you really miss is their ability to stop the run. They're so vital in terms of taking away opportunities, taking away these big plays. And that's what Duke was able to really capitalize this weekend. This was about as poor of a running run defense performance that I've seen Syracuse do. And I want to say in a while, but it's really only until I think November of last season when they just got torn apart by A.J. Dillon and the Boston College run game. It was the same situation. There were two runners in the BC game, two runners in this game, and Syracuse had nothing to counter either of them. They both breached the 100-yard mark in the first half of the football game. The first half of the football game, Duke had 200-yard rushers, and it was every play. And it wasn't simple. It wasn't anything crazy. They're just running the ball. They weren't doing anything out of the ordinary. Syracuse simply couldn't stop them. They started to pack the box. It worked a little bit better, but it still did not do much to do anything in terms of countering the Duke run game and alleviating that. It was basically you're putting a Band-Aid on a bleeding wound that is just spewing blood. And yes, the Band-Aid slows it down a little bit, but the blood just starts to trickle out the side of the edges.
And you mentioned the BC game. That was a different situation in the fact that that was like a fourth string quarterback. When we saw Syracuse pack the box, Chase Brice was in there who, while he struggled this year, has the talent to find open receivers. And we saw him do that. Just to quantify the run game dominance, I want to give you two stats and hear your reactions to them. In terms of first downs, Duke gained 17 first downs on the ground. Syracuse gained one first down on the ground. And in terms of net rushing yards, Duke had 363 rushing yards. Syracuse had 28. And they also lost the passing yard battle. It wasn't like this was a philosophical thing. They got destroyed on the ground. You can't win any football game when you give up 363 yards on the ground unless the quarterback is completely incompetent. And Syracuse is going to have to find a way to prioritize the run more because, as you said, they've defended the pass pretty well, but maybe they have to make some sacrifices and put a couple extra guys in the box and send a few more blitzes up the middle, because what happened last Saturday could very well happen again next Saturday if changes aren't made.
Exactly. You look at, you know, the way Duke was able to do it, some big plays, obviously, but it was just consistent, 7-yard gain, 10-yard gain, 12-yard gain. They were doing it nonstop, even in the pass game. I mean, when you look at Jarrett Gardner, for Duke, when you look at his 52-yard touchdown pass from Brice, it was really just a 17-yard pass over the middle, like under 20 yards. And there were three guys within, you know, distance of him to be able to tackle. And he just ran straight and no one did anything. So it was yards after catch. It was the ability to just not stop anything. And Duke ran away with it. And I mean, Liberty is, although you're going to look at Liberty on the schedule, and I look at Liberty on the schedule at the start of every season, and you automatically chalk it down as a win. That's not the case this week. Syracuse is torn to shreds right now. They've got a lot of Band-Aids on, to keep going with that metaphor there. The Band-Aids are everywhere, and they're still bleeding through there. They've got a lot of stuff to figure out. Can they do it for Liberty? I don't know. I mean, you want it to be against Liberty, because regardless of how good Liberty looks this year, it's still going to be, in theory, your simplest game left on the schedule. You've got to figure it out this week. You've got to put some fixes together, because this is a Liberty team that is not to be taken lightly. You can't just look ahead. You can't think that this is going to be a simple win. Liberty will torch you. They will beat you up. They've got a dual threat quarterback that can make this defense look even worse than it did last Saturday. And they've got a lot of opportunities to really take and capitalize on Liberty's first of three ACC games of the season.
Yeah, the Flames love to run the football. And before we completely transition to next week's game, I just want to quickly also throw some shade on the offense, because I think as much as we've been talking about the defense, there are a few key stats that maybe make the defense's performance look slightly worse than it was. The main one being, if you look at time of possession, Duke had the ball for nearly 40 minutes, 39 minutes and 43 seconds compared to Syracuse's 20. The Orange put up 24 points. Seven of them were from the defense. And Tommy DeVito did have a season-high 255 passing yards, but 120 of them came from two plays. So there needs to be a more consistent running attack, an intermediate passing game. The Orange have to just have the ball on offense more. If they go down and either hit on a Hail Mary or go three and out every drive, this defense is going to wear down no matter who's there. Syracuse needs Tucker to be a little more consistent, although he actually wasn't terrible last game if you look at the final stats. And they just need to be hitting guys like Nykeem Johnson, Hackett, Benson a little bit more. You know, people might look at Benson's 53-yard touchdown and think, oh, they're getting the tight ends involved. It was still only two receptions from the two tight ends combined. There needs to be a 7 to 12-yard passing game that just doesn't exist right now, where they're not trying to shoot for the big hitter, but they're just creating manageable second and third downs to move the ball.
Now, Dino said after the game that this is not necessarily a reliance on the big play. It was just the opportunities that they had and the coverages that they saw that made them, you know, dependent on the big play. But look at the Syracuse offense and look at the Syracuse defense. They are heavily dependent on the big play. The only reason that this game was not one of the bigger blowouts of the season is because the Syracuse defense racked up four turnovers. They're getting torn apart, play in and play out, but they've got these fortunate breaks. They've got the ability to force a few fumbles. They get the scoop and score. They get two more fumble recoveries and interception. They had a couple of other opportunities to pick off Bryce. This is something that they've become really, really reliant on. And if there's a game where Liberty takes care of the football and there are other ACC opponents you've played, you know, obviously North Carolina has gone above and beyond what a lot of people expected this year, but they're still a little bit overrated in my opinion. I don't think they're quite as high as where they should be. A good football team. Pitt is a pretty good football team. Georgia Tech, they looked all right against. They looked pretty good. Their best game of the year. I can't imagine they play better than that. But you've got the gauntlet of the ACC still lingering ahead. You've got your two toughest games of the season in Notre Dame and Clemson, you know, lingering ahead. Notre Dame, the last game of the season, Clemson just 2 weeks away. You're not going to be able to get those turnovers, which is something that is going to tear this defense even further apart and make the opposing offenses just thrive that much better because they can't take the ball away in those situations. They've become really, really reliant on interceptions and fumble recoveries. And on the offensive end, their offensive output, it comes off of 50-yard touchdowns. You saw it from Benson. You saw it from Harris. You saw it from Harris earlier in the season. They need big plays to score. You saw Sean Tucker's run against Georgia Tech. They need big plays to score. They don't drive well. The red zone play calling is some of the worst I've ever seen. I'll throw comparable to the Atlanta Falcons over the past 5 years. They cannot call the right play in the red zone ever, despite the entire city of Syracuse and the Syracuse fan base being able to throw a better play call out there during the red zone on first and goal from the three, first and goal from the five. You can call better plays than they do, and they don't. They're too reliant on the big play on the offensive side, and they're too reliant on the big play on the defensive side. And the defensive big plays have worked, but the offensive big plays, they have had their moments, but it's too reliant. DeVito has not been able to make those throws, and now you look down the line. Can Culpepper make that throw? Can Dylan Markowitz make that throw? Can Jacobian Morgan make that throw? You've got to find somebody who's going to be able to make that throw, or you're going to have to figure out how to gain 5 yards of play because they can't do that with this offense and the players that they have in place right now.
Yeah, with all due respect to Dino, I don't really care if he says they're not reliant on the big play. All the data suggests they are. That's the only way they've scored touchdowns. I don't believe they've had a passing touchdown of fewer than 40 yards this season. So they are clearly reliant on the big play, and that's going to be a problem next week up against Liberty because as we transition over to the Flames, they love to run the football. They have a dual-threat quarterback who runs – a little bit more than he passes most of the time. Plus, they got Josh Mack, who's close to being a local kid. He's from just outside Rochester, and he's been one of the most productive rushers in the FBS this season. Liberty wants to chew the clock, especially, although I know they're the betting favorite, I still think that they come into the game feeling slightly like an underdog going on the road to a Power 5 school. They're going to want to chew up clock, and at least at the beginning of this game, try and keep it close unless, you know, they run away with it quickly. Then maybe they'll try and put together some quick drives. But Hugh Freeze in this offense knows what Syracuse can and can't do. He's been there and done that in terms of coaching. And if I'm Liberty, I'm saying we're just going to pound the ball up the middle because SU hasn't shown any ability to stop that so far.
No, it's the guy to look out for is Malik Willis, and it's a complete transformation from whatever you remember from last season in terms of Buckshot Calvert, who was just an absolute quarterback in terms of can throw the ball like no one else. Malik Willis is not that kind of guy. Yes, he can throw, but he is a runner. He is a dual threat quarterback in every definition of it, maybe even a run first quarterback. I looked at the stats, and Max Chadwick said to me earlier in the week to look out for Willis because he is one of the better quarterbacks in the country in terms of PFF rankings and in terms of just his overall play. And I'm looking at him, and I see, you know, he averages 190 passing yards per game. I was like, what is there to worry about this guy? And then you keep scrolling, you get to the passing statistics or the rushing statistics, and you see he averages 115 yards on the ground every game, and he's got more scores in the run game than he does in the pass game. This is a guy who Syracuse needs to be worried about because the run defense was terrible last week. The pass defense was better, but it still left a lot to be desired, and he can figure out ways to beat you both on his own, let alone with a strong run game. This is a Liberty team that needs to be ready because if they can come out and play from the start, and they don't have to get those jitters out. If they're ready from that first snap, it's a Liberty team that can run all over Syracuse and can make a pretty embarrassing scoreboard if Syracuse comes out and plays anywhere remotely close to how they did against Duke.
Yeah, I don't think this game, or at least this Liberty team, will at all resemble what we saw last year. I mean, in that 24-0 win for Syracuse when they were ranked 22 in the country, which feels like years ago at this point, Liberty only put up negative four rushing yards. Sorry, they didn't even put up four. Negative four rushing yards. I would bet my entire bank account that will be completely different. Malik Willis is an incredible runner, and the thing that honestly scares me is despite his 190 passing yards per game or 195, he can throw the football. This is a guy who competed for the starting job at Auburn. He lost it to Bo Nix, but he was in consideration to be the Auburn Tigers starting quarterback because he can make tight window throws. His decision-making for me has some room. Occasionally, you know, he just won't give up on a play because he's such a talented runner. He wants to try to force in a great throw. But when he's making the correct decisions, he looks like an ACC or any Power 5 quarterback in the way that he can hit his receivers on tight windows. And these receivers, despite low usage, are pretty impressive. There's a freshman, a redshirt freshman, CJ Yarbrough, that made a SportsCenter top 10 catch. He missed a game, but he's been incredible. He's 6'3", bigger than Ife Melifonwu, who will probably be covering him. And he's a guy who I think looks like an NFL body. So there's a lot to worry about if you're Syracuse coming up against this Liberty Flames offense, because they can throw a lot of different looks at you, whether it's Willis running, Mack and Pickett, their running back tandem going, or they're trying to get you in the pass game.
Ben, I got to throw it back because the last year's Liberty game was the first episode of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. So following last year's game against Liberty was our first episode of the Ostrom pod, in which myself and Brendan Mortensen came on and said that after the number of sacks, 8 sacks for Syracuse in that first game of the season, after 8 sacks, that this could be one of the best defenses Syracuse has seen in a while, and that Kendall Coleman and Elton Robinson were going to be the best duo on the D-line that Syracuse has historically ever seen. Boy, were we wrong. We were wrong. Go back and listen to that episode. We came out firing. Syracuse had won 24-0. Yes, it was an ugly 24-0 win, but we were so high on the defense and the ability, and it was such an awful take. And now you come around to this year, and it was almost a similar vibe. I think you watched the defense in the first 2 weeks kind of contain UNC, contain Pitt for three quarters. And you were like, Tony White's 3-3-5 is legit. It's got everything it needs to do. And then some of the pieces start to fall apart. You lose your key contributors in Cisco. You lose a guy in Coley. You lose pieces throughout this entire defense. It's an injury-riddled defense. And it's not necessarily the 3-3-5, but those hot takes, those really high-up thoughts on the Syracuse defense have once again started to dwindle down. And here we are in a situation where we're questioning their ability to stunt a Liberty offense. And that's not a knock on the Liberty offense. It's just a knock on the fact that Syracuse, as an ACC Power 5 school, should, regardless of season, regardless of circumstance, have the ability to blow away a Liberty football team. And that is by no means what you're going to see on Saturday.
No, and I understand, you know, in the pre-Shulman era, why you guys made those takes. I think the Liberty scheme is really dangerous this year. And what I mean by that is last year they had Buckshot Calvert, who was a great college quarterback, but he's a pocket passer by trade. And Hugh Freeze wants to run an up-tempo, RPO-based offense where he's moving lots of pieces around. And Malik Willis is exactly the quarterback to do that. So I don't expect Syracuse to get many sacks at all, to be honest. I've watched a lot of tape on Willis in the past 2 weeks. He's a hard guy to bring down. I mean, this is an overused comparison by far. But, you know, he's got Lamar Jackson-like instincts back there where he sees guys and you're behind, coming from behind him and juking out of the way, and you think he has, you know, six eyes going all the way around his head. It's going to be a scramble for Syracuse. I think the best thing they can do, despite me raving about his passing ability, is contain Willis and make him a passer in the pocket, because that's not what Liberty wants to do. They want to get out and running, up-tempo, get this Syracuse defense tired, and then use these RPOs. Willis is their number one option, really, in the red zone. He's run the ball in four times already this year, and they'll do that when they run tempo and you get tired. They want to get Willis out and running, and without Coley, without Cisco, without a lot of key contributors, this is a bad matchup for Syracuse. I really cannot stress how much I think potentially even this spread undersells the advantage that Liberty might have in this game.
We've got some quarterback talk lingering towards the end of the show, but until then, we bring on the Liberty expert, Nick Pierce. He is a sideline reporter and pregame analyst on the Liberty Flames Sports Network. So we caught up with him yesterday to talk a little bit in more depth about some of the guys you're going to see for Liberty on Saturday and some of the matchups that we'll be seeing then as well.
We have the pleasure today of being joined by Nick Pierce. He is the pregame and sideline football reporter for the Liberty Flames Sports Network, also the public address announcer for the Carolina Panthers. Nick, thank you for coming on today. How are you doing?
Great, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Looking forward to Saturday and seeing some Flames and Orange football. Should be a good rematch from last year. Thanks for having me.
Now, I got to ask you, you mentioned to us before you're an Atlanta native, but you're the Panthers' public address announcer. Is there any conflict of interest? Do you maybe give the Falcons a little more boom than you would other opposing teams?
No, you know, I get asked that question a lot. I did grow up a Falcons fan, living just south of Atlanta as a kid. So I loved Jamal Anderson and the Dirty Bird days. But it's like I tell everyone, when you get hired by an NFL team, you pull for the team that pays you. And I've certainly taken to that. And actually, look, I really love Carolina. It's been a lot of fun. And as you spend a lot of time around a team, as I'm sure you guys know, you do genuinely become a fan of it. And it's been a lot of fun to be a part of it. And certainly the NFC Championship run a few years ago, getting to call that game in the stadium was just a blast. So, no, I pull for the Panthers. It's all keep pounding now.
The other team that pays you is also having a pretty solid year. The Liberty Flames are 4-0. Was this something that you expected? Because I think on the national scene, it kind of feels like the Flames came out of nowhere.
That's a good question. Expected, I don't know that any of us really knew what to expect this year, because you look at what this team was a year ago, and I think it's fair to say that they exceeded maybe the expectations on a national level then, because first season, FBS bowl eligibility, your all-time leading passer, your all-time leading receiver, no longer on the team this year, obviously graduated, and Antonio Gandy-Golden, now a member of the Washington football team. But that team last year, I think, exceeded some expectations in going to the Cure Bowl and winning that game. So I don't know what folks' expectations nationally were this year coming into this, with a new quarterback and a lot of new starters. I mean, even on the defensive side, from what Syracuse saw from the Flames last year, I think there's 8 or 9 different starters now from last year. So exceeding expectations, certainly, I guess I would say, getting the national recognition, maybe in the top 25, getting a few votes on the coaches poll, that maybe exceeded some expectations. Obviously, I think COVID has played a part in that, and some teams getting some recognition that maybe wouldn't normally get that. Flames will certainly take it, though, and they've done their part, winning all four games that's in front of them. I think they certainly came in from as an underdog to the Western Kentucky game. But again, I don't know that anyone really knew what to expect in week one. From that point on, they've been able to just kind of take care of business and do it all at home. So this will be, I think, a chance to validate some of the attention that they've gotten up to this point, doing it against an ACC opponent on the road, regardless of whether or not that opponent has struggled, as Syracuse has so far this year. I think if they can go up there and have a good showing or win the football game, which some people are even predicting that they might now, I think that that would certainly go a long ways towards validating what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas has them as 3-point favorites right now coming into the Dome. So everyone is starting to take note of what the Flames have to offer this year. And you mentioned they lost a lot in terms of probably one of the greatest football names in terms of Buckshot Calver and then Antonio Gandy-Golden. So they've got the replacement, though, and it seems like Malik Willis and DJ Stubbs have kind of just seamlessly flowed into that, albeit a different quarterback style, but they've still been able to come in and really have some early season success.
Well, you said it right there, Owen. It's a completely different style. Buckshot Calvert was a gunslinger, had a massive arm. Not to say that Malik doesn't have a big arm, but Malik Willis adds that extra dimension with being able to make plays with his legs. And we saw that very early. Week one against Western Kentucky, he became the first Liberty quarterback since 1979 to rush for 3 touchdowns in one game. So this is really an element that the Flames haven't had a whole lot of traditionally, but it's exciting, right? I mean, that's the direction that college football has gone to now. Everyone likes the dual threat quarterbacks and the spread offenses, and that's really what the Flames do like to run. They run a lot of 10, 11 personnel, and you're going to see them run the football, but they've also got the ability to get their quarterback outside the pocket, make plays, and make plays on the run, even downfield to receivers. So you mentioned DJ Stubbs, big yards after the catch guy. He can really make the first guy miss a whole lot. Had 100 yards receiving, I think 119 it was, against FIU second week of the season. I wouldn't say that he's necessarily emerged as that number one per se. I asked Coach Freeze about that a couple of weeks ago, and he said, those were the matchups that day. He said DJ took advantage of it. You know, he made the plays. But, you know, if we don't go to DJ Stubbs 8 or 9 times next week, you know, it's not necessarily you can't really equate it to an Antonio Gandy-Golden. So I think that there's a lot of guys that are capable of stepping up and making plays in the receiving core. Interestingly enough, the Flames have not had all of their receivers healthy at one time. Noah Frith looks like a big outside target. Looks like he might miss this game this week. He had a pulled hamstring a couple of weeks ago. They've been without C.J. Yarbrough at times. He's still getting into a little bit of game shape out there. So it'll be really interesting to see once they get the full complement of guys out there working at one time together, how good this offense can be.
C.J. Yarbrough is a guy that I'm really excited about. Just watching a lot of the tape and obviously that incredible one-handed catch he had in week one. What are your expectations for the redshirt freshman going forward this season?
Yeah, I think, again, he's a guy that's still trying to maybe get back into game shape completely, according to Coach Freeze. Didn't look quite as crisp out there, but, you know, as you said, he's got the ability to go out there and make some big-time plays. And I talked to him about that last week, I think it was. And CJ, you know, I said, CJ, what are you thinking when you're going out there making these plays? He said, look, he goes, honestly, he said, I'm just talking to myself the whole time. He said, you know, I was like, go get it. All right, we got to make this catch. You know, it's just, it's a very determined mentality out there that he has. But expectations, you know, I think that he could be one of the top guys in the stable. And there's other guys that really haven't scratched the surface yet. I mean, CJ Daniels is a guy that had an incredible fall camp. We really haven't called his name much or had an opportunity to call his name much yet this season. So it's just going to be a matter of being able to distribute that football. There's only so many balls to go around, and we'll see, you know, how he kind of emerges.
Speaking of the offense as a whole, they've done a really good job at taking care of the football. I think only three turnovers so far this season. Syracuse has struggled defensively at times, but they lead the nation in terms of forced turnovers. How do you think the Flames offense will kind of match up against that big play, big turnover style defense as opposed to, you know, some of the defenses they've seen before?
Well, look, I think that's the biggest key to the ball game right there is turnovers. The Flames cannot afford to go on the road and turn the thing over. And now they emphasize it every week. But, you know, I was talking to Peyton Pickett today, one of the Flames running backs, about it. And he said, you know, ball security, that's everything. You know, we've got to make sure that we go in there, we don't give the ball up, and put them on a short field, because that's the surest way to lose the game. Yeah, I think that that's something that they're going to have to be cognizant of. I watched a little bit of the Duke game from last week against Syracuse, and it looked like that was the one time that they got themselves in trouble. I mean, what was it, 600-some yards of offense that Duke had, but then the turnovers, you know, that's a good way to get yourself on the wrong side of things. So I think that that's probably the biggest key to this game this week. And the Flames defensively, conversely, have been able to take the ball away a little bit more. A couple of interceptions from our safeties this week. Marcus Haskins came away with his first career INT. Second interception for Javon Scruggs this past week, a veteran back there at strong safety. So, you know, I think that that's going to be an interesting component as well, especially with Syracuse going to Rex Culpepper at quarterback, a guy that, you know, has experience, but obviously not the amount of reps that a Tommy DeVito has. So it could very well be that whoever wins the turnover margin wins the game.
I want to talk about the defense, but first I want to hit a little bit on the running back room. Josh Max seems like he's the lead guy, 300-yard games to start the season. Shedrow Lewis is kind of smaller, quicker, can catch a few passes. What's the big differentiation you see, though, between Mack and Peyton Pickett, who's kind of the second running back?
Yeah, I think Peyton is maybe a little – once he gets downhill, it's a little tougher to stop that train, you know. He's got a little bit of speed to him. Once he gets to that second level, he gets a little bit harder to bring down. Deceptive speed maybe, you know, because he is a bigger guy. But, you know, at 5'8", 220 pounds, so he can kind of be, you know, like a bowling ball almost. But, you know, I think that if the Flames are able to get into the second level, kind of like what Duke was able to do this past week, I think that they've got a chance to have a lot of success here, especially running the football. But Josh Mack is a guy that he's a patient runner. They compared him to somebody the other day, and the name is eluding me right now. It was an NFL back. But anyway, he has good eyes back there. He's able to kind of follow the lead blocker. But once he gets to the hole, you know, he's gone. So J-Mack is a guy that is certainly the go-to guy. We saw them split the carries a little bit more evenly between those three this past week. I'll be curious to see if J-Mack maybe gets a few more of those this week. Shedrow Lewis, looking at him, he's smaller. Shedrow 5'8", 175, but he's a better runner between the tacklers maybe than he's given credit for at times. But still, the thing that makes Shedrow so tough is he's a lower center of gravity type guy. He's a little harder to bring down. He can get lost behind some of those big bodies back there. So all three of them, I think, complement each other, and they bring something different to the game. And the Flames will certainly be relying on all of them, I think, this week.
Yeah, big names on both sides of the ball now. And defensively, Anthony Butler has looked phenomenal. He's PFF's top-rated linebacker so far this season. What has he done, and how has he just been able to really own offenses through the first 4 weeks?
Well, look, first of all, Anthony's a great kid. Came here from UNC Charlotte, wasn't getting a whole lot of playing time down there. He's an older guy. Saw an opportunity to come to Liberty, fell in love with the campus, and he's made the most of the opportunity. So, first of all, hats off to him. But, you know, he's a guy that has certainly been a bright spot in that linebacker room, because the Flames are thin at linebacker, admittedly so. Coach Freeze has said that there's not as many bodies in that room as he would like to have. So Anthony Butler, for him to kind of step up and be that leader a little bit amongst that group has been nice to see. He had a couple of interceptions in one game. So, you know, I think he's certainly been a playmaker on the defensive side of the ball, been a big reason why the Flames have been able to, you know, stop the run, get after the quarterback a little bit.
The Flames have a bit of a unique defensive formation or base defense. Syracuse, of course, runs the 3-3-5. How would you describe Liberty? Like, am I correct in saying that it's kind of a 4-2-5?
Yeah, probably so. A little bit more of a 4-2-5 look, and they've got that hybrid linebacker D end that a lot of schools do. Darrell Johnson's played that role especially well, and Darrell is actually a guy, he transferred in from ASA College. Darrell Johnson's only played D end for about a year or two. He actually was a linebacker and a safety coming up. Hard to believe at 6'4", 235 pounds, but he's certainly been a force coming off that edge this year. And the Flames are pretty deep on that that side of the ball with the defensive line. Treshawn Clark at the other defensive end position. Austin Lewis is listed as a defensive end, but he has played some three technique as well, playing more on the inside. Just a way that they've been able to figure to rotate guys around. And then Ralphs Roussens, the nose guard at 6'6", 325. The dude had like 50 or 60 tackles last year. That's unheard of. So they really like the depth that they have up front with the defensive line. I think the key is really for the Flames defense is they don't want to have to ask them to be out there on the field for more than, you know, 55, 60 plays if they can avoid it. You don't want those guys out there 70, 75 plays starting to get stretched out a little bit more. But certainly here in the early going, Flames have been able to play some complimentary football, keep the offense out there, win the time of possession a little bit more. Didn't last week, but didn't really need to, as it turned out. But that's certainly a key to their success.
Syracuse's offense has started to, not entirely, but really started to rely on the long play, the deep ball to get things going. How does the Flames kind of 4-2-5 look address that? And from what I've seen, it looks like they're pretty solid at keeping the long ball in check.
They do. They've got a little bit of youth at corner. Chris Magenson, a sophomore, but he played a lot as a freshman, so he's got a few more reps than maybe an average sophomore would. Quentin Reese, a true freshman, he actually started, I think, the first game of this season when the Flames were down a couple guys at Western Kentucky. But they've also got some veteran presence out there, and Emmanuel Dabney, who came away with a fumble recovery a couple weeks ago. And then really the guy that's the big communicator on that side is Javon Scruggs, the strong safety. He's a junior. He was a guy that played quarterback for a state championship team here in Virginia as well in high school. So Javon is kind of the big talker back there, communicator, not trash talker. I want to make sure I clarify there. I think at times they've kind of gotten themselves in some trouble, maybe with, as Coach Scott Simons, the defensive coordinator, would say, with some dirty eyes, you know, letting guys kind of run past them. But certainly with Taj Harris out there, he's a guy that claims a lot of attention, and rightfully so. So the Flames are going to have to make sure that they don't let him get past in coverage here this week. Otherwise, you know, again, we talk about turnovers being a key, but explosive plays. You lose the turnover margin and give up explosive plays, this thing may not be real pretty on Saturday.
One of the guys trying to stop Harris is Jawan Treadwell, who's the younger brother of Laquan Treadwell, who, of course, played for Hugh Freeze when he was coaching Ole Miss. What have you seen from Jawan this year? I think he's someone that a lot of fans are going to have their eyes on, obviously, just because of the name. And he's also, you know, he was on Last Chance U when he was a community college player. So he's got a lot of hype around him.
Yeah, we're still learning a little bit about Jawan Treadwell, but he's certainly a guy that's emerged here over the last couple of weeks as one of the top tacklers on that side of the ball. Saw him make a stand last week against ULM when the Flames were still trying to preserve the shutout. It was a fourth down tackle, and he brought the guy down at the goal line. So he's a guy that just seems to be putting himself in position to make plays, and he's making those plays when he gets the opportunity. So he's been one that's been fun to watch. And yeah, obviously the tie there with Laquan Treadwell, there was an air of familiarity with the family and with Coach Freeze already. So made a lot of sense to get him here. But I think we're just starting to kind of see what Jawan Treadwell can bring to this defense.
To look a little more macro here, this is the first of three games that Liberty plays against an ACC opponent. What are you looking for specifically in this game to see how they're going to compete in those other two games as well?
That's a good question. I think that they're going to come out and compete. That's the big thing, is just seeing a team that walks out there on the field and the moment's not too big for them. You know, I asked some of the guys today about just playing in a dome, you know, like you don't really get to do that a whole lot in college football, you know, with a few exceptions. And I think DeMario Douglas, our punt returner, who had a 73-yarder last week for a touchdown, he said, hey, you know, it's like, I think of a dome, I start thinking about the NFL, you know, and it's like kind of a big atmosphere. Granted, there's not going to be any fans there, but, you know, I think that a lot of the guys are just kind of embracing that and embracing this opportunity. They're trying not to get too caught up in the whole, you know, top 25 votes, and Kirk Herbstreit tweeted about us this week and this, that, and the other. And I asked Malik Willis about that actually, and he said, look, that's rat poison. You know, he took the line from Hugh Freeze, and who took it from Nick Saban, I guess. But, you know, I think that these guys are really embracing this. And I think that traditionally, just being – I've been around the program for a while now. You look throughout the years, this team is seldom overmatched or overwhelmed by the moment of going against a Power 5 school. Certainly in 2017, going down to Baylor and beating them in a shootout, I think speaks to that. And then if you even look at a lot of the scores throughout the years, I mean, these are – a lot of times these are close ball games, or at least they are for most of the time. I think even last year was a close ball game, but the offense just couldn't really get anything going. So it looked like it was a little more lopsided maybe than what it actually was. So I think if they just come in and compete, show well, play well, and just kind of let the chips fall where they may, I think that that's really all you can expect out of them in any game, but especially these Power 5 games.
This is a tough game to pick. Obviously, as of right now, on Tuesday when we're recording this, Liberty is the betting odds favorite. Syracuse is the Power 5 school, but Liberty is the school that's 4-0 and has looked, I'll say it if you won't, a lot better than the Orange have this year. What are your expectations? Are you feeling like Liberty is the favorite going into this game?
That's tough. I don't know that you can ever really see yourself as a favorite when you're going to play a Power 5 on the road, but certainly Syracuse has encountered its share of hardships. I haven't heard the latest on DeVito. I assume he's going to be out at this point. Is he done for the year?
They haven't confirmed done for the year, but it was alluded like to that it's long-term.
Right. So, you know, you've got a different quarterback out there trying to run the offense. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's something where, I'll go back to what I said before. I think that all of these players feel like that they have a good shot to go up there and win the game, and are probably believing that they will win the game. At least I hope so. You know, anytime you step out there on the field, that's just kind of the vibe I get by talking to these guys. So I think you're going to see a really good football game. Expect them to win. I mean, look, I wouldn't put anything past these guys. They're extremely well coached. They're confident and they're talented. And this is not going to be certainly not going to be any kind of a rollover for anybody out there. I think this is going to be a good football game.
Can I pay you for a score prediction, or am I not going to be able to get that out of you?
Score prediction. Oh, let's see. I'll say the Flames 24-17. How about that?
That seems
perfect. You put me on the spot. You put me on the spot. I'll take the Flames 24-17.
That'll probably be around where I end up making my score prediction as well. Nick Pierce, the pregame and sideline reporter for Flames football on the Liberty Flames Sports Network, thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope to watch an entertaining game on Saturday.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Another thank you to Nick Pierce of the Liberty Flames Sports Network. Lots of great stuff in terms of the Flames offense, Flames defense, looking into this game. He's got Liberty with a 24-17 win. I think we are probably in a similar boat, but we'll get to that to close out the show. Before then, a little bit of quarterback talk. So definitely no DeVito this week. We're thinking it's going to be the remainder of the season per what we saw from Stephen Bailey a couple of days ago. It brings up the question. You've got a redshirt senior in Rex Culpepper, but you've seen what Rex can do, and no offense to Rex, and I don't think this is going to become an anti-Rex podcast, but in terms of playing time, I think we are anti-Rex. I think you've got to go with one of the true freshmen And that brings up the conversation. You've got Dylan Markowitz, Jakobian Morgan. They were listed as both the number two in terms of the depth chart this week. Rex was listed one, and then it went Jakobian Morgan, or actually it went Dylan Markowitz or Jakobian Morgan. I don't know if that was an alphabetical thing or if that was a terms of ranking thing and that Markowitz is a little bit higher up than Morgan. But regardless, I think we're in agreement here that you've got to look towards the future.
Yeah, and it just comes down to as great of a story and person and teammate that Rex Culpepper is, I don't believe with him under center, Syracuse is going to win many football games, if any. We've seen Rex this season. He had the 69-yard touchdown, but you know his ball just doesn't exactly look like a Power 5 starting quarterback ball when it comes out of his arm. And so you wonder, what is the point of putting him in if this year is truly going to be a transition, if you're not going to win? I'm not saying you're going to win any more games with Dylan Markowitz or Jakobian Morgan under center, but potentially playing them now helps you win games in the future because, you know, if Markowitz or Morgan come into next season with 5, 6, 7 games under their belts, it's not going to be as much of a shock if they have to be called on for a major role as the quarterback in 2021.
Exactly.
Difficult thing, though, I have to say, is it looks like Rex is at least going to start the game against Liberty. I think you have to give Markowitz and or Morgan experience in that Liberty game because you can't throw them in against Clemson. Like, no. Imagine playing your first college game against Clemson. That could shake your confidence a lot. So, again, I think we're both in agreement here. I want to see one of the two at least alternating drives or getting a quarter or coming in the second half. I think you need to rep out Markowitz and Morgan in a real game to see what you have with these freshman quarterbacks.
Yeah, it kind of brings me back to the Pitt game where you saw DeVito was taking the bulk of the snaps, yes, but there was a short leash in terms of what they were letting him do, and Rex was coming in and out throughout the game. I think that's got to be the approach that you have. Maybe there are some situational spots. I'm not exactly sure what, you know, each of them have to offer because there's limited intel on these guys. I know Markowitz was a 3-star guy out of Texas, and that means a lot in terms of his ability, I would say, to be able to play and compete at a high level in Texas. And it's going to possibly transfer onto the field, but we don't know that much. And Dino mentioned it. I'm sure you'll get to that as well. It's something that is a weird situation because you need these guys to get their reps immediately because Rex is Rex and Rex can come in and he knows this offense probably better than the other two, undoubtedly better than the other two, but you've seen Rex. He's had some chances. Yes, he had that beautiful throw to Harris down the right sideline. However, he's had some really bad throws as well. Missed wide open guys, just accuracy issues throughout the entire season. Is there that big a drop off? If you start going with these two guys, are you going to win that many more games with Rex if you go to Markowitz or if you go to Morgan? I don't think so. So you might as well look ahead, build this team up, give one of those guys the reps they need or both of them the reps they need. Make that a dual system where you're going in and out between the two of the freshmen and see who can figure it out. Get them that experience because, as you said, you don't want to get into 2021 without either of these guys with any experience with the given situation. And additionally, you don't want to get into Clemson with both of these guys without any experience in the given situation.
Dino said, as you just mentioned in his press conference, he hasn't seen a ton from these guys. So I don't think either of us are claiming to be, you know, a Dylan Markowitz or Jakobian Morgan expert here. They have barely repped out in practice because of COVID restrictions and just your ability in college to get reps as a QB3 or 4 is not really there like it might be in the NFL if they carry 3 quarterbacks. But they're unknown quantities. Rex Culpepper is a known quantity, and this season is more about the future of the program. So I agree with you. I'd love to see, in my dream world, the two quarterbacks playing next week are Dylan Markowitz and Jakobian Morgan on alternating drives until someone steps up. Or if they don't, you just keep going. But I think in reality, Rex Culpepper will start next game, and I'd love to see one of Morgan or Markowitz alternating through. That being said, I think we have to make our score predictions this week with the assumption that the redshirt senior Rex will be starting. And for me, that has an impact on it. And I will say, makes it a little clearer, because I don't know how I would predict the offense of output if Dylan Markowitz or Jacobian Morgan was under center. I'll take the first prediction here. I'm not very optimistic about this game. I'm going 31-20 for the Liberty Flames. I think they're going to run all over Syracuse, and I'm not confident that the Orange can stop it.
Yes, Ben. We're kind of in that situation right now where Syracuse is sort of on Let's Make a Deal. If you ever watch the daytime game show, yep, Wayne Brady currently is offering you $500, and the $500 is Rex Culpepper. And you can take the $500 and run, or you can open one of the mystery curtains. That is Dylan Markowitz. That's Jacobian Morgan. Sometimes behind those mystery curtains, there's a zonk, and you lose, and you lose it all. And you could have had the $500, but you could have a car back there. And you've got to play for the car, because the car is what's going to get you as excited as can be, rejuvenate a fan base, figure some things out, look to the future. So I think that's my final words in terms of the quarterback. Now we got to go prediction. And I don't want to pick Liberty. I don't want to. I really want to stay away from it, because it seems like, once again, one of those weeks where, for whatever reason, Syracuse has figured enough out. But I think Liberty can edge them out with the given situation. They've got great players on the offensive end, as we talked about, great players on the defensive end. They're a tough matchup right now. They're a nightmare. There's a reason that they're 4-0 going into this game. I'm going to say a little bit more out of Syracuse. I'll say 27-24, and I'm going to give the edge to the Flames.
Both of us picking the FBS Independents, and I think that says a lot about Syracuse right now and the direction of the program. It's going to be an interesting matchup between these two teams. It's been an interesting episode of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. And do you have any final closing words here, Owen, for this independent game, final non-conference game or lone non-conference game that we've both picked Syracuse to lose?
You're 1-3. It doesn't look good. You've got injuries on the offensive side, injuries on the defensive side, questions on both sides of the ball. What do you have to lose? Throw some stuff out there, mess around a little bit, try some stuff, try some young guys. You've got to look to the future, because that is what this season is going to be. If it wasn't already a rebuilding year, coming in when you've got, you know, a strong 2021 class coming in, you've got to look to the future, because you don't want those guys to get into this situation where they're going to start dropping out, start looking elsewhere, start, you know, decommitting and looking for better schools or better opportunities. You've got to do what you can. You've got to be able to figure this out so that you don't sacrifice the future, turn this into a full-on rebuilding year, because you've got the capabilities next season to figure some stuff out and start to build from there. It's a start fresh kind of game. But it is what it is. Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Follow along with us on Saturday. Ben Shulman making his WAER play-by-play debut. So tune in for that. You don't need to watch this game on TV. Listen to what Ben has to say. He'll give you the best of the best. Kickoff at 12. Countdown to kickoff at 11:30 on WAER.org or 88.3 FM. We'll be tweeting at you at Ostrom Avenue Pod for our thoughts throughout the whole thing. Probably not Ben tweeting during his play-by-play, but who knows? He might toss one out there just to keep you guys on your toes. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. Have a great week, Syracuse. We'll see you next time.